Hello, I'm Brian. Welcome back to Look Roll. The gap between the previous episode and this one is a bit longer than I had hoped for. Some mundane things from the normal realm, not in Maldita's realm, but this one that we find ourselves in, got in the way. But I am back on track. There's more episodes on the way. I'm very much looking forward to continuing this story, especially after the events in this very episode, which you're about to listen to. And thanks always for listening, and thanks for everyone who has shared comments on the various podcasting platforms that exist in the cyberverse place. Really appreciate it. Thank you very much, and let's get on with the show. A recap on last time. Nott and Maldita rejoined Dorca and Lord Trake, and they brought with them the body of Laria, the lineage knight, who had been killed by the Great Vulture. Initially, Trake was in denial about her death and tried to revive her, but he was brought back to his senses when Nott gave his allegiance to Trake, to the House of Trake. They followed that with the funeral for Laria, and then they began their journey north. So they're all going to travel together north to the Trake household. As they were leaving Broken Peak behind them, there was a huge earthquake, and Broken Peak was further transformed by the stirring of a great beast within it. They moved onwards, and towards the end of the day, they were traveling through a bog along a rough trail, drier land in amongst the boggy land. And they saw some travelers up ahead who had a caravan and a horse pulling it, and were readying themselves to meet the travelers when they saw five skeleton warriors, climbing out of the bog water to ambush the travelers. Trake, riding the steed of Nott, charged in and began the battle, and was joined by the others, and they defeated the skeletons. One of them surrendered. It didn't show any ability to speak, but lay down its weapons and kind of begged for mercy. There are two other surviving skeletons who are so broken that they seem unlikely to be... I don't know how you heal a skeleton. Whether anyone will want to or not, I don't know, but they're probably not going to play a role. And that's pretty much where we left things. One other thing I want to start including in recaps is just the status of people's virtues in case it becomes relevant, because there's a long journey ahead and recovery might be a factor. So I'm not going to list a bunch of stats. I'll just say that Maldita is on 2 of 5 spirit, Dorca is on 8 of 12 spirit, and Trake is on 6 of 9 vigor. Nott has not lost any of his virtues. The battle has ended. Trake has joined the travelers and is introducing himself to them and checking that they're safe and well. Maldita has run back to Dorca, who fell during the battle, and she's checking on him. And Nott stands in the twilight, standing over a skeleton who is kneeling down before him, begging for mercy. The skeleton has laid down his shield and his falks. Nott has kicked away the weapon so that it can't reach for it. And Nott asks the creature, "Do you understand me?" And at first there's no reaction. He asks again. Maybe he prods it with the butt of his mace and says, "Do you understand me?" And I'm going to ask the stars to see whether it's possible to communicate with this skeleton. So I'm rolling a d12. I get a 5. No, but... At the end of the battle, Nott thought he saw some signs of humanity in this creature. It looked like it was displaying some kinds of emotion. And when it looks up at him now, he locks eyes with it, or he's staring into the eye sockets. And he's waiting to see if it can communicate, if it can react to things. He leans in close. He's leaning in to see, is there something there? Is there a soul remaining in this thing? And when he gets close, it lunges towards him. I'm going to make an unarmed attack. So that's a d4. and it rolls a 3. It reaches up with its bony hands and tries to get Purchase around his neck, but Knot is wearing plate armor, and its bones kind of clatter against the armor and are diverted away from his neck. Knot takes a step back and kind of shakes his head, clearing the thoughts out of his head that something else could have been possible here, and spins around his mace and brings it down, slamming down onto the skeleton and crushes it. He exhales. He looks at the other skeletons that are moving ever so slightly. They have broken bones. Their bodies are no longer complete. And one of them is crawling towards the falks on the ground. And he slowly goes about the quiet, unpleasant work of smashing them, destroying any remaining unlife that exists within these things. We'll skip ahead to making camp with these travelers. There were 4 travelers. They have a caravan, they have a workhorse, and they are traveling weapon makers. It's in the Omen. They are artisans known for their ability to make fine weapons from certain woods. I think given what's just happened, it might be reasonable that they may offer some of their wares to the company. So I'm going to take a look at the weapons table. Common weapons, uncommon weapons, rare weapons. Something that's jumping out at me, thinking about wooden weapons, is maybe a bow. No one in the company has any ranged weapons, and that could be a nice addition. So I'll go with an uncommon weapon, a longbow, D8 slow. And given that these are artisans who make particularly fine weapons, let me just have a flick. On the myth and knight pages, there are little prompts at the bottom of the pages. Oh, okay. For example, an object, a mist club. Let's throw that in as well, okay? So they're also going to give them a mist club. Hand weapon, D6 club. It's a simple looking piece of wood, but finely sanded and very smooth looking. And at the bottom, you can unscrew the bottom and you can pour in water into it. And for reasons that are not completely apparent, when you use it in anger, steam will come out of some fine holes that are carved into it. So it creates a small cloud of hot steam when you're wielding it. I don't know if that'll be useful, but it sounds cool. I'm going to grab a name from a random page. The leader of the artisans is called Perrin. One thing I'm conscious of is that Trake, his family are the rulers in exile or in hiding, and I wonder, in these circumstances, does he tell people who he is? I'm interested to know the reaction of these ordinary citizens of the realm to that information. Are they loyal to Queen Brank? Is this a shock to them? Or are they possibly even supporters of him? I'll roll on the relationship spark table to see how they feel about Queen Brank. 2 and a 12. Reluctant guardian. They're sitting around the fire, and one of the travelers is tending to Trake's wounds and applying a bandage. And he's grimacing while it happens. Knot is walking the perimeter and looking as best he can in the darkness out onto the horizon to see if there's anyone or any creatures out there. He's already talked to the travelers and learned from them that they use this trail frequently when they're traveling to the south, and they've never had any trouble here before and certainly never seen anything like these dead rising. Perrin, the woman who is the leader of this group, she's the chief artisan among them. She's introducing herself and gives them these gifts. She goes to the caravan and looks through what's there and returns with a very fine bow and the mist club. And she's smiling about the mist club, saying, "This one is something particularly special. We don't make many of these. Let me show you." And she unscrews the bottom and she begins this demonstration of how the mist club works. And Maldita is amazed by this. She's hoping that she'll be the one who gets to use this weird device that leaves a trail of steam as you're kind of swinging it through the air. And overall, the atmosphere is good. One of the artisans has taken out a lute and he starts to play. He's kind of singing gently. When the moment seems right, Trake clears his voice, and Perrin and one or two of the others turn to him, and he says, "Perhaps it's time for a proper introduction. My name is Eustace Trake, of House Trake." And he sees from Perrin's reaction that she knows of his family, and he goes on. He says, "My family are enemies of Queen Brank and her government. I myself am a wanted criminal accused of treason and sedition. I do not ask anything of you. You've shared your camp with us, you've shared your food, and given us merry music and companionship. I don't ask you to risk yourselves in any way. In the morning we'll be on our way, and whether you tell anyone you saw us or not is your choice. I have no shame of who I am, and I will not ride around covering my face with a hood and pretending not to be from the noble family I represent." And he becomes silent again. He doesn't force anyone to respond. He's not kind of staring at Perrin, waiting to see how she reacts to this. When he revealed that, they were hanging on his every word. The music stopped, and there's just the crackling of the fire. And now that's the only noise, because no one's speaking. Nott was a little further away, looking into the distance. When he heard the music stop, he turned and he came back. I think Nott is going to look on this as an opportunity to show a little pride. So he will say, "I am not the Gilded Knight, loyal retainer to House Trake," which he's been for less than 24 hours, but I think he'll introduce it in a grand way. And he joins them and sits down, eager to see how people respond to this, because he has never introduced himself in this way before. Perrin, who is the leader of this group, Perrin replies, I apologize for my hesitation. This comes as some shock. We, as you can see, we're artisans, we craft weapons, and we are in service of Queen Brank. She is our patron. She has requested many fine creations from us, and we've been in her service for many years. She looks around at the group, and there's a brief hesitation, and then she says, "At court, I hope you understand I must never display anything other than loyalty to Queen Brank. I have a family, I have many people depending on me, but here on this desolate road, in the aftermath of a frightening battle, perhaps now is the time to say, she is a cruel queen. And if the moment comes when you need my aid..." Trake interrupts her and he says, "Please make no promises now. If such a moment comes, I'll contact you then. But this has been a fearful night, and I would not like you to make an oath under those circumstances, especially with the dangers associated to it. But we may seek you out in the future, and then you can make that choice." Nott is really impressed by this. He sort of, under slightly pressurized circumstances earlier in the morning, he dedicated himself to Trake and his family. And throughout this day, he has felt like more and more this was the right decision. He saw how brave Trake was in battle, and he sees how he's not taking advantage of this situation in the way that he could. The conversation shifts again, and Nott says he will take the first watch while the others try to sleep. And so the day comes to an end. The company are in the Myth Hex. Ending a phase in the Myth Hex containing a myth always reveals its next omen without making a wilderness roll. When possible, the knights also get the drop on the omen. I know what the next omen is. I won't read it out in advance, but everything's pointing to the next scene being what it's going to be. So let's jump straight into it. I'll ask the stars, do the events that are about to happen occur during Nott's watch, or is it the second watch of the night? Yes, but... Nott wakes up. He shouldn't have been asleep. He looks around quickly and checks to see that did anyone notice that he was sleeping, and they haven't. It's still his watch. He glances up at the stars and gets a sense that not much time has passed since he began his watch. And he stands up and stretches out his body and begins to walk. He stays within sight of the camp, but he's walking south. And from time to time, we'll glance back and see the fire there, but he just needs to wake up his body. So he walks a few hundred paces to the south. And he gets as far as he's comfortable leaving, because it's not a great thing to be doing while on watch, and turns back and is about to walk back towards the camp. And then he hears the sound of marching. It's coming from behind him. It's coming from the south. And he turns. It's very dark, but there is starlight. So he can see the rough outline of this dry trail that makes its way through the bog. And just on the horizon, something moving. It's very hard to see any detail, but there is something there, and the sound is carrying of footsteps, and there could be dozens of soldiers in armor marching. And he turns, he heads back to the camp. He doesn't run, he's kind of conscious of alerting them to his presence, and he's in this potentially noisy plate armor, so he kind of swiftly walks back to the camp. And when he gets there, he starts kicking dirt onto the remaining fire. The fire is burned quite low and it wouldn't have produced much light, but he now completely extinguishes it. And while he's doing that, the others around him wake. Maldita looks up, kind of groggy, and says, "No, what's wrong?" And he says, "There are troops to the south. There could be 100 of them. They sound well armored. They're moving at speed. I haven't seen them, but I can hear them clearly, or I could, down the trail there." And everyone looks, and then Nott goes and he wakes Trake. And after a moment of preparing himself to come out, Trake leaves the caravan and hears Nott's report. And together they take a quick moment to analyze what they know. Freetown is the nearest holding, and it is, if they follow this trail north, it makes sense that any armed force, if they're coming to either in peace or to attack a holding, that Freetown is the likely target. And Trake racks his brain. He's I don't know of any tensions with the south. I don't think there's, unless this is something, a surprise attack. The artisans and Perrin, who are within the court of the Queen, are also unaware of any... Well, you know what? Maybe I shouldn't say that. Let's roll for that. I was going to ask the stars roll, but let's have a look at the spark tables. Is there something that might talk about relations with the realm to the south? Or maybe it would be under dominion. Yeah, I think that's good. Let me take the dominion page. At the start of a season, you can do a roll to see what is the overall status of the realm, or a domain within the realm. I'm fudging this a little bit because I'm not into this phase of play because the main characters aren't involved in it, but I'll roll something up and see if it's something that might influence their perception of what's happening here. So I'm going to do a crisis roll. I get a 3. Dilemma: choose between two crises. And there are 6 possible crises. Crises apply to the whole domain, not a single character, and remain until resolved. They can be chosen by the referee or rolled. I'll roll 2d6 and pick one of them. Debt and doubt. Debt is dire need of coffer and coin. Doubt is seeds of betrayal against you. I've already said earlier in the previous scene that Perrin, who's within the court of the Queen, considers her to be a bad queen. So that's aligned with doubt. So seeds of betrayal against you. Let's ask the stars. There's this internal problem within the realm that some people are doubting the authority of the Queen. I'll ask the stars, is there any rumor or possibility that forces to the south of the realm, foreign forces, essentially, could be moving against the queen. I rolled a 6, which is no but. Trake asks Perrin quickly, have you heard anything in court? Is anyone making moves towards raising support from the south? And Perrin says no. She's heard nothing like that, but it doesn't seem impossible. So their working theory right now is that someone has arranged for troops from the realm to the south to come north, and maybe they're going to attempt to take hold of Freetown. Nott looks around at the group and sees that the artisans are scared. They are members of the court of the queen, and if this is a military force opposed to the queen, then they'll likely be killed. Okay, so here's what they have. They've got one workhorse for pulling the caravan. They've got the steed of Nott and Maldita's pony. And I said in the last episode that I wanted to give names to horses because I don't do that enough. And the horses, I feel like, are quite important here. And the question of what happens to them. They may not survive this, depending on what decision the group make. So let's at least give them the dignity of having names before that happens. The simplest thing is open up the book and get some random names. Nott's majestic steed is called Foxter. The pony of Maldita is called Neolas, which is quite Tolkien-ish, I think. And I'm just going to go simple for the workhorse belonging to the artisans and say that it is called Tom. They could break camp and they could try and move north, but they won't have time to pull a caravan with one horse. They wouldn't stay ahead of these marching troops who are coming at a quick march. So they would need to abandon everything and flee to the north if they wanted to get to Freetown before them. But if they were to do that, then the soldiers would come across the camp and see that someone is here and they've fled, and then they might send scouts further on to catch them, because if this is a surprise attack, they won't want anyone warning them. I think the move here is to hide in the bog. So to get off this trail, it wouldn't be easy to track them moving through the kind of sodden ground of the bog. Nott's suggestion is that they get off the road as fast as they can, grab whatever belongings they want to keep, and just go into the depths of the bog and duck down, see if they can get a sense of who's out there, and hopefully be passed by the troops. So one of the artisans can ride their own horse, Tom. Another can go with the pony. And I think I'm going to say Maldita will take Foxter, the steed. And Maldita will be given the important instruction of riding north and warning Freetown that there are troops coming. They met the steward of Freetown previously, and Nott says to Maldita, go to Freetown as fast as you can and warn Howell. Tell him there are troops coming. We'll come after you as soon as we can. And Maldita nods, and she puts a hand on Dorca's shoulder and nods to him. And Dorca is a little fearful in this situation. She says to him, you'll be fine. And then she mounts Foxter, and the two artisans join her on the other horses, and they all ride north. Everything in the camp, including the caravan, is being abandoned. And the remaining, how many have we got? 2 artisans and 3 from the party. So there's 5 of them are going to run into the bog. And when they glance to the south, they can see the shapes of troops coming towards them under a huge black banner that's being waved, that is obscuring the stars as it kind of moves back and forth. They move out into the bog. Let me see how successful this is with just a luck roll. A 4. So that's a blessing. This goes very well. They get off the road, off the trail, and into the bog, and it would be impossible to track them, especially at night. And they get some distance away from the trail, but they can turn now in the shade of a lumpy protrusion out of the ground with some grass growing on it, and kind of peeking over that and keeping an eye on what's happening behind them. And as they watch, they see the warband coming clearer and clearer. They watch in horror as it becomes clear that these are not living soldiers. They are more dead creatures, like the skeletons like the rotting living corpses that they've seen elsewhere. And there are so many of them. As they're marching along this trail, they're trying to count out how many there are. They're marching in an orderly fashion. They are an intimidating military unit. There could be maybe 60, 70 of them. And at the head of the column of troops, there is one figure in huge armor with horns protruding from it. And they're accompanied by several attendants who are waving this banner. The banner that, as far as I can tell, appears to be completely black. It doesn't have any emblem on it. This leader, this general, or whoever this is, they hold up a hand, and as one, all of the troops stop. There's no called commands. It's a silent, just a gesture, and then they all stop. And this figure moves forward and goes into the camp they just left and inspects the caravan. The attendants just are standing static, kind of watching on as this one person, this armored general, looks through the camp, looks at the fire, and sees the hoof prints where the horses have just left, and inspects them for some time. He returns to the column of troops, and he selects. Let's see how many he selects. I'll roll a d6. He selects 6 troops to break away from the formation and gives them commands, and then they start running. They run north. Maybe before they start running, they remove some pieces of armor, and they each have a sword, and they go at speed north after Maldita and the others. And then the entire column begins marching again, marching north at a good, steady pace. And Nott and Trake and Perrin look on. So that is the final omen from the dead myth. 3 warbands of rotting corpses and mocking bones rising under a black banner, marching on the nearest holding. And maybe this is a short episode, but it is where I'm going to call it. So next time they're going to have to work out what to do about this situation. Thank you for listening, for making it this far into the episode. I'll just include a brief reminder that there is now a form you can use to submit prompts for the show. So I think I mentioned it in the previous episode. If you visit tinyurl.com/lookrollcamp, you can give prompts that might be used in discussions for the characters around the campfire. There's a link in the show notes to that. I didn't use it in this episode because I think the tension was a little high for the casual campfire conversations that might come up, but I do look forward to using that in the future. And excited about what's coming next. I haven't played the next session yet. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know which characters will survive. I hope they do both survive. But I don't know what's going to happen, and I'm excited about it. Okay, thank you. Bye.